convenes. The time is 3:50. The date is April 10th, 2006. Members present: Guttenberg, Crawford, Rokeberg, Anderson, Berg. Okay, we'll go to House Bill 494 first. We have Joshua Appleby here. Josh is like, please be serious.
Who does he represent?
House Bill 494 is our bill. We're not going to move it today. Josh Fink asked us to sponsor.
I just want to note for the record that the minority made the quorum here.
Yeah, they did. And Josh Fink is a really good guy. I hope he's online.
Thank you for that.
I hope he's at home, not at work. Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Josh Appleby, staff to Representative Anderson. This bill that you have before you, House Bill 494, aims to correct some undue, unnecessary, and unintended consequences for a previous bill that we passed last year. House Bill 427 was passed in 2004. It responded to a recognized need for oversight of private professional guardians and conservators and gave responsibility for regulation of private professional guardians to the Division of Occupational Licensing, which is now the Division of Corporation Business and Professional Licensing, just for Mr. Urien. A new statutory section was created in AS 0826, which set out the process by which private guardians and conservators would obtain licensure and act as guardians or conservators for disabled Alaskans. That legislation also made changes to the guardianship statutes contained in AS 13.26. House Bill 494 deals only with AS 08 and not with AS 13. This bill is supported by the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing and the Alaska State Association for Guardianship and Advocacy. The principal provisions of this bill respond to problems with HB 427 from 2004, which were recognized when the Alaska State Association for Guardianship and Advocacy started working with the division to promulgate the regulations for that legislation. I have online James Parker to speak about the specifics of the bill and also in regards to the committee substitute that was handed out to the committee members earlier today. And I think that we would need to adopt that before we get into the specific testimony of Mr. Parker.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I move the adoption of committee substitute for House Bill 494 of Labor Commerce 24LS1763/F Michelle 4406.
Okay, hearing no objections, so moved.
From the Family Guy.
Okay, Josh, any more comments on that? Okay, do you want to go to Stanley Parker or Fink first?
Mr. Parker is the foremost expert on this bill.
Okay, Jim, do you want to go first?
Sure.
Stanley Parker and Fink, that sounds like a 60s band. Okay, Jim, you go first.
This is Jim Parker in Anchorage. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
And did the committee receive the sectional analysis?
I believe we did. Yes, sir.
Thank you. I don't intend to go through every part of the sectional analysis, but as was just stated, this bill is proposed because in the process of implementing regulations coming out of the of House Bill 427, which was passed 2 years ago, which reformed certain parts of the guardianship statutes and also created legislation that allowed private professional guardians and conservators to be monitored by occupational licensing. We found out that there were some unintended barriers to the private sector. It was always intended that this legislation would result in a healthy, vibrant private sector for providing guardianship and conservatorship services to individuals in Alaska with disabilities. And the principal barriers were the organizational license requirement and the fact that it wasn't clear that if you, as a guardian, intend to provide conservatorship services, that you don't need to get a separate license. So what this bill does is it deletes the organizational license requirement, and it makes it clear that a person wanting to get a full guardian license is able to perform conservatorship services as well, as long as they meet the requirements to get a conservatorship license. That means that somebody who once might have had to get three different licenses would now only be required to get one, and everybody in an organization who's providing guardianship and conservatorship services would need to be licensed. And it really, there really was no reason or basis for the organizational license requirement, so by eliminating that, we think that it will provide incentives to the private sector. Another aspect of the bill, which is at the end, is the public guardian statute would be amended to specify that any employee of the Office of Public Advocacy who's acting as a public guardian and providing guardianship and conservatorship statutes, services, would also have to meet the requirement that's currently applicable to private guardians and conservators of going through a criminal background check and also being certified by a nationally recognized organization. The only nationally recognized organization is the National Guardianship Association. And I think those are the main things. We did amend Section 4 AS 0826030 is amended to reflect the fact that a person right now who's certified has to meet the standards of the National Guardianship Foundation, National Guardianship Association, and there's a different standard concerning criminal background checks or barrier crimes than what existed previously. So just to eliminate any ambiguity and consistency, it's changed to bring in the standard that's used by the National Guardianship Foundation. Most of the changes do involve the individual license and the change involving a full guardian license. There were some changes that were made because occupational licensing felt that they just really didn't add anything, that they were redundant, that they weren't necessary because occupational licensing already had the power to obtain information if there was some evidence of wrongdoing or some need for scrutiny. For example, tax returns, it was pointed out by occupational licensing that they would fill file after file and they could be incredibly bulky and that there are also some privacy interests because they'd be open to the public, and so everybody in the public could look at all licensees' tax returns, and they didn't think that was a good idea, and the SOG agreed with that. I think those are the main things. I really don't think it's necessary to go through every section line by line. I certainly am open for questions if anyone has any.
Jim, I appreciate your analysis of this, and just so you understand, we're going to hold the bill today because Representatives Lynn, Ledoux, and Cott are not present. We have Representative Guttenberg. Do you have a question for him just on the changes?
No, I just have a question maybe for the chair or this gentleman might be appropriate. Just the history of what this is about. I guess I wasn't aware that guardianship was actually a business. And how that's come to be the difference between, you know, if somebody needs a guardian, they go to a lawyer or somebody and set that up, and now there's a whole other structure out there for people to go into business as guardians. I was wondering if I could get that background and then see where we're going and which.
For sure, and that's a good question from Representative Guttenberg. Jim, before you go ahead, why don't you explain and delineate the difference between a guardian and a conservator, and then really briefly go through what our bill did, my bill, which came through Labor and Commerce, Representative Guttenberg supported, last legislature.
Certainly. Well, the difference in Alaska between a guardian and a conservator is a conservator is a person who's appointed only to manage the financial affairs of somebody who has some sort of disability or incapacity. A guardian has more far-reaching powers, including, besides, if they're a full guardian, they have the ability to make decisions about somebody's finances, but they also have the power and obligation to make decisions about medical care, about placement, an obligation to make sure everybody gets all the benefits that they're entitled to, like Social Security and things like that. This bill doesn't change anything about the existing structure of guardianship. It's a process set out in statute that results in appointment through the court. But we've always, for many years, we've had private alternatives to the Office of Public Advocacy. The Office of Public Advocacy provides guardianship and conservatorship services as a last resort when there's no family member or friend or private entity that's able to do them, to provide those services. But this doesn't change anything about that. The bill 2 years ago resulted in some monitoring and oversight of private professional guardians and conservators but it was, as I said, never intended to discourage a private sector. Did I answer your question, sir?
Enough? Because we're getting a ways down the road, so they...
Yeah. And we're going to hold the bill at least today so you can analyze it a little bit further. Representative Roper, any questions?
Well, yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think I understand the difference in the fact that these actual functions have been around some time, but looking at page 2 of the bill in a new subsection, so that a licensed private professional partial guardian may not perform conservator duties. What's a partial guardian?
Partial guardian is someone who doesn't have all of the duties that Alaska statute sets out. And the reason for that subsection is to recognize the possibility there may be people who want to get licensed to act as a guardian, but they don't want to, for some reason, assume financial responsibility, either because they're not very good at it, or it's something they just don't want to get into, but they are interested in providing guardianship services for compensation. We don't think that's going to happen very much, but it is a possibility, and we wanted the statutes to allow for that possibility.
We'll follow up.
Follow up?
Is there a definition here, the distinction between a partial and a private professional guardian?
A partial guardian here would be a private professional guardian or conservator. The references here are all private. Professional guardians and conservators in this bill.
So a part, okay.
There are definitions in Title 13 about limited and partial guardians.
Okay, I'm looking at page 1. They have both full and partial. It's new. Okay. I'm not sure. Is there further definition other than what's in the bill here that makes the distinction?
The distinction between full and partial?
Yes.
There is. It's Title 13.
Okay, they're elsewhere then.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, seeing no other questions, we'll go next to Betty Stanley, then wrap it up with Josh Fink.
Thank you. I'm here representing ASAGA, the Statewide Association for Guardianship and Advocacy, and we worked with Representative Anderson on House Bill 427. I've been a court visitor for 17 years. I do the court investigation prior to guardianships or conservatorships being appointed by the court. This bill and House Bill 427 was primarily intended to license the private sector that when I started doing this job, we did not have in Alaska. There was no alternative to a family guardian or to the Office of Public Advocacy. And over the years, the private sector has come in and opened up businesses, and House Bill 427 provided for licensure for them, not for family guardians. In working with the Division of Occupational Licensing over the last 2 years, since this bill went into effect in January 1 of 05, we did learn that it slowed the process down, or it impeded the process, or it made it very expensive to become a licensed private professional guardian, and that because of the language that we proposed and was passed, people were being asked to get 3 licenses, one as a conservator, one as a guardian, and one as an organization. And that was never our intent. So this does essentially clarify some language. It gets rid of the multiple licensure question. It makes it easier for people in the private sector who want to get licensed to obtain license. It makes it a little less expensive for them. And so we support the changes and also the amendments that the public guardians section addressed for them to be certified and have background checks. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Betty. Any questions for Betty? Okay, Josh Fink, to wrap up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Josh Fink, Director at the Office of Public Advocacy. I really do want to thank you, Representative Anderson, for introducing this as well as the initial bill. It's critical that we have some regulation of private guardians, and you did that with House Bill 427. Just to echo the comments of other people here, we didn't mean to require people to get 3 licenses and be so onerous to enter this as a private business. So this takes care of that. hopefully will allow more individuals to become private guardians. And we fully support the bill, and it should also be stated, occupational licensing, we worked with them, and they support the bill as well. You've got a zero fiscal note from OPA and a zero from OCC licensing. And with that, I'm available for any questions, and again, just would like to express my gratitude to you for introducing this.
Okay, are there any questions? Seeing and hearing none, then we will hold the bill until the next Representative Roper has a question. Good.
Oh, Mr. Just a question to the chair. Did I hear Mr. Fink appropriately? He's owning up for the mistakes in the last one. Is that true?
What do you mean owning up?
We're causing the problems that this bill is correcting.
Josh, what is your comment to that?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Roper. Yes, you know, to err is human, and we messed up. I mean, it was a good bill initially, but we never meant to require so many licenses.
Okay, that makes me really feel a lot better about the sponsor and the original sponsor, right? Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll hold the bill. We'll hold the bill, and we will bring it back next, hopefully next meeting. If folks have any questions, that will be the time afforded to you to answer those, and you can have them ask and answer.
Yeah.
Next, we'll go to House Bill 431, Winery Licenses. Representative Dustaff is here. Welcome. Yes. Welcome. You just remain silent. Someone's listening to the committee minutes. They're like, I never really heard anything. Apparently the bill was passed out.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
For the record, my name is Christine Marisigan. I'm staffer to Representative Ledoux, and I'm here to talk about House Bill number 431. I believe you have a CS in front of you.
Yep.
If you want to.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative Roper.
Mr. Chairman, I move the committee substitute for House Bill 431, 24LS1578/G, lockup 4606.
Okay. So moved. No objection to that. That is before us, version G. Go ahead.
Basically, House Bill number 431 makes it possible for in-state wineries to sell their product to Alaskans. So it gives Alaskans a chance to basically to buy Alaskan here in the state of Alaska. Currently, if you go online, you can purchase wine from out of state from a number of wineries. But if you wanted to purchase wine from a winery that is within the state, you're not currently under current rules, you can't do that. So basically, this bill sort of addresses that issue. I do believe we have Douglas Griffith from Alcohol Beverage Control Board, if you have any questions dealing with some specificity to that. And if you have any questions about this bill, I'd be happy to answer them.
Great. Just so the folks know in the committee, Doug Griffin is online from the ABC board. We also have, for questions, answers, we also have Stephen Thompson and Dale Fox. So why don't we go to Stephen Thompson first, then Dale Fox, then Doug Griffin for questions. Steve?
Hi, this is Steve Thompson. I own Alaskan Wilderness Wines, and I'd like you guys to support this bill. It would allow us to be treated equally with out-of-state wineries and be given the same privileges. And I really hope that you guys do that and allow us to have the same opportunities as out-of-state wineries. And if you have any questions about it, feel free to ask.
Thanks, Steve. Representative Roper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What types of wine do you produce, Mr. Thompson? What kind of gallonage or do you produce?
Right now, I produce a bunch of different berry wines, like salmonberry, blueberry, gooseberry, raspberry, and then rhubarb, sparkling rhubarb, and I do some meads, which is honey, wild rose, and wild fireweed, and I produce about 150 cases a year.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And Bob Tkachberry. He never laughs.
Sparkling okay, rhubarb. That sounds interesting.
Effervescent. With a slight bit of tannin. Okay, we'll go next to Dale Fox.
This is Dale Fox, Executive Director for Alaska Char. I'm here on behalf of hundreds of hotels, restaurants, bars, and package stores. And to today, especially on behalf of Alaska's fledgling wine industry. Alaska Char supports the provisions for Alaska wineries to be able to ship product to Alaskans. As many of you know, there, on the national level, there was most states had rules that allowed the in-state wineries to ship and not the out-of-state wineries, helping the local wineries. And, of course, that met Supreme Court challenges. But Alaska has a small industry, and we should do all we can to help that industry. And clearly, if out-of-state wineries can ship to Alaskans, if I can buy from Napa Valley, I ought to be able to buy from Kodiak, and they should be afforded the same opportunity. In terms of issues related with this bill, there should be one clarification, we believe, on the bill. Currently, if a retail package store ships alcohol, they must follow the rules laid out in 13 AAC 104.645, which basically provides a number of provisions to make sure that the buyer is 21 and that you have the order and that's paid for. And it's some clearly good ideas in terms of shipping alcohol. It should be made clear that if in-state wineries ship, and we believe they should be able to, that they are required to follow the same rules that package stores currently ship, because we believe that's an important part of the legislation, or should be an important part of the legislation as well. At any rate, Alaska Char supports this and hope that you support our fledgling wine industry.
Thanks, Dale. This is Chairman Anderson. Thanks, as always, for your advocacy. Dale certainly knows the industry well. We'll get to questions. I noticed Crawford, Representative Crawford, first, and Representative Guttenberg, and also maybe Doug Griffin could answer that regulatory question if that could be adjudicated once this bill passes, so there's some parity and delineation in that. But we'll get to Doug after the two questions. Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to go back to the previous speaker there. That seems to me that we dealt with a similar bill to this that Gary Stevens brought two or three years ago, and I was just wondering what happened.
It didn't pass.
Didn't pass.
Yep. Okay. Representative Crawford. Just kidding, Guttenberg.
Yes, please. I mean, I'm not sure who this is directed to, whether it's Mr. Griffith or not, but there was a Supreme Court ruling that said you couldn't have two sets of rules, and I think we're correcting that situation. I'm wondering if there were any other statements by the courts that we're not addressing here, or was it simply this issue directly?
Can you answer that?
I will take a shot at it. Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, yes, there was a Supreme Court ruling, although, interestingly enough, in most other places, you can ship wine from within the state, and it was preventing from people from out of state to ship wine into the state. So the ruling basically said that you had to treat them both equally. However, here in Alaska, we're reversed. We allow people to ship in, but we can't ship within.
So you can ship interstate, but not intrastate.
Correct.
Representative Rope, Guttenberg,
just to follow up, did they address the taxation issue and the parity of taxes at all? Or was that an issue that came up?
I do not believe that is correct. I believe they only were addressing it in the sense of taxes as it came in and out, like you couldn't charge an out-of-state wine more to ship into another state than you were already charging the people within the state. So intra, they were both made equal.
I'm just wondering, Mr. Chairman, if they were just starting to nibble on the edges of the interstate tax issue as it applies to internet sales.
Question. Representative Rufford?
Oh, yeah. Mr. Chairman, can I ask Mr. Fox to give us a citation he did before about the compliance issues, if you could? I didn't quite...
13 AAC 104.645.
13 what?
AAC, Administrative Code 104.645. That's why I said adjudication regulatory. Doug Griffin could answer that because he would promulgate that.
Okay,
we'll go next to Doug Griffin. Doug, any answer to Dale's concern? You don't need to comment otherwise because you were listed just as questions. No need to delay the bill. But any thoughts on that, making sure that that doesn't happen?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. My name is Doug Griffin. I'm the director of the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board, for the record. We would have no problems of basically applying those same provisions or in instructing the wineries to follow the same provisions there that we use for the written orders. I think that does make some sense, of course. So it's a little bit of an apples and oranges thing in that if the wineries may be shipping to Anchorage, for example, or to other places that don't have any kind of a local option, which is generally what you have with the written order provisions. But I think for equity, the point of not giving wineries or disenfranchising package stores, I think that's probably a good idea to look at either requiring that regulation to apply or to pass a regulation very similar to that to apply to direct shipment from wineries.
Representative Roper, any other questions?
Mr. Chairman, I
either you or me.
It sounds as if we probably need to make an amendment to create the duty, unless the director thinks that the duty to comply with the regulation is already in place.
Doug, what's your response to that?
Prefer to see a statutory requirement on that.
Representative Roper, through the chair, I guess I probably would like to talk to my legal counsel before I get too far down into a hole that I can't dig myself out of.
Doug, this bill goes next to finance. You can sponsor Representative Ledoux and staff can have that addressed. We can move it out today, and then they can have that worked out before finance.
Great. That'd be wonderful, Mr. Chairman. I think, like to have a little bit of a discussion with Mrs. Carpinetti, who serves as legal counsel to the ABC board.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to go on the record and say that I think that the winery should abide by the law, and it's just whether we need to put it in statute or the current regulations would be applicable.
Okay.
And I'm sure that the sponsors will take care of it.
Good. Representative Guttenberg.
Just wondering if there's a companion piece on the other body.
Is there a Senate bill?
No, sir.
So this is it. Right. And the bill goes next to finance on the floor. So is there any other Representative Roper?
Sorry, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Griffin, Representative Guttenberg asked about the Supreme Court case. This particular bill before us only extends those privileges to an in-state winery. Just by way of asking, because of that case, are not some of the Alaska statutes out of compliance with a Supreme Court ruling currently as far as the importation of wine and the requirement?
Representative Roper, through the chair, the Alaska, we never had any statutory or regulatory provision to address the question of an Alaskan ordering wine from an out-of-state winery. In the absence of a statute, we when we got calls about it, and we got lots of them, we would just say that it is permissible for Alaskans to order. Obviously, they have to be 21 years of age, but they could order wines from other wineries for personal use only. And you know, we got all kinds of questions from people wanting us to define quantities and everything else, and we try to just say, as long as it's for personal use. I mean, we got calls from GIs coming back from Germany wanting to bring quantities of German wine with them, and all kinds of questions along that. And we would just say, as long as it was for personal use, and because then if it were for resale, then obviously some of Title IV would come into play, and so it had to be for personal use. So the Supreme Court, I think, mainly just addressed, I don't think they took away powers of taxation. And I heard the comment about the internet taxation question. And I know that's still hanging out there in some regard. But I think the Supreme Court decision was mainly looking at the fact that all wineries had to be treated equally. Either a state could ban direct shipment of all wine from wineries to consumers, or they had to allow out of state as well as in state on an equal playing field.
Just one follow-up.
I was under the impression, didn't we have a requirement if you were a winery, let's say in the South 48, that you had to be licensed in the state of Alaska to export into Alaska?
No, we don't. Representative Ruckberg, through the chair, I think there was some. There may have been legislation way back a few sessions ago, but there's never been anything passed that addressed that point.
Well. There was a long time ago, that's why I'm confused, but let's not bog this thing down any further.
Okay, so anyone else wishing to testify online? Hearing, seeing none, no one in the audience. So we will close public testimony, and what is the wish of
Chairman,
Representative Lynn?
There is one question I have. When we adopted the CS, we deleted the winery a fee. What was there a reason that you did that? Or
through the chair, Douglas Griffith had said in his letter that he didn't think it was a good idea, and I figured then it's something that we would take out.
Well, that was one of the problems before, where we had the bill was more costly than the fiscal note created a situation where it cost us money to do whatever we were trying to do. So
I think it's better.
Maybe
that was removed.
Yeah, right.
Mr. Chair, I specifically came to this meeting to move HB 431 with individual recommendations and attach zero fiscal note.
Seeing here, no objection, so moved.
I missed out on the samples, did I?
That's right.
Let's wave it out of finance while we're here.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, we want Gabriel to bring that rhubarb sparkling wine.
Yeah.
Okay, then, let me see. For Wednesday's schedule, we have House Bill 350, Unfair Claim Settlement Practices, House Bill 480, Insurance Company Self-Audit Information, and House Bill 240, Brewery and Brewpub Licenses. We will thereby adjourn at 4:24 today.